south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Saw something mighty strange yesterday. Well, I guess it's a sign of the times. You see, I was out canvassing some of the music stores in a big Latin American city. Lots of music stores, you know. And I saw a few strange things that would never happen in a music store up in the States. You've heard me say before that Latinos have a very musical culture. Maybe that's why they're so happy. They're singing and dancing all the time. In fact, I've been to many a Latin party and bash, and three-year-old kids are out there dancing, boys and girls alike, just cutting a rug, which is probably why so many Latin males absolutely love dancing. Whereas I don't think I've ever met a first-world Caucasian gringo who actually likes dancing for dancing's sake. It's only a means to meet members of the opposite sex. I mean, I've never heard a gringo friend of mine ever say, "Hey, let's go dancing. I've been chomping at the bit all week to get out on the floor." Don't tell me you don't remember those junior high and high school dances where the guys were all standing, mulling around, looking at all the girls on the dance floor, either dancing with each other or with guys they call today gender non-specific. Anyway, the fact that music is a huge part of Latin American life. They need musical instruments, right? That means when you go to a music store here in Latin America, you'll see all the brands you're familiar with up in the States. And a lot of weird brands, too, since there are instruments down here. Mostly percussion stuff you just don't see up in the States, except in Latin quarters. Now, since Latins love everything and anything first world, they also crave musical instruments with first world brand names. And that stuff's here, but most of it is unaffordable for the average Latin person, which is why really cheap Chinese clones are everywhere, along with Japanese, Korean, and Mexican guitar clones, too. Now, the odd thing is, first world American musical instrument brand names are usually not made in America. Not anymore, anyway, as with almost everything. And the few that are actually made up in the States are very expensive and high-end. So, for example, if you see a famous guitar brand like Fender, which formerly was made in Fullerton, California, and now almost all of them made in Korea, Japan, or Mexico, your average Latin American musician doesn't know that. He just knows a U.S. brand name when he sees one. And the American model would be on his ultimate wish list. Now, of course, there have always been a lot of handmade musical instruments here in Latin America. Some just laughable and shoddy, others exquisite. And instruments made here in Latin America are not generally made in big factories. Except for the U.S. company Fender, making guitars in Mexico, they're mostly one-offs and custom-made jobs. Now get this, I know a garage mechanic that's so low-end, he doesn't even own his own car. Does really good work, though. Yet one day I walked in, he was playing a very nice handmade guitar. I asked him where he got it, he said, "I made it." I'll tell you, some of these Latin guys are very clever craftsmen. That guy was so talented. He could play the classics, flamenco, and man, could he drink. Which is why he probably never had a gig outside of his garage. Anyway, like I said, all first world musical and recording equipment is available down here at the music stores. However, they're first world expensive because they're imported. But since almost no one makes a decent living playing music down here, just like up in the States, there's a gigantic used musical instrument market. You see music stuff for sale all the time on those famous bulletin boards. They're all over the place too in classified ads and on OLX.com, my favorite Latin American Craigslist. So as for musical instruments, retail, they're expensive. But man, the used market, wow, can you get some deals. Now, why do you think that is? Well, because almost everyone who's selling an instrument's a desperate seller. So yesterday I was checking out some of the big music stores. Not for musical instruments, but to buy a couple of windscreens for my recording mics. Anyway, I do what I always do when I walk into a music store. I spend way too much time just checking things out. You do-it-yourselfers know the feeling when you walk into a hardware store, and you ladies know that feeling when you're out shoe shopping. There's a good kind of energy there, you know what I mean? And generally, when you're talking about musical instruments, they've got the no-name knockoffs in most of the store, as well as some very nice first world displays. That's where you'll find recognizable first world brand names like Fender, Martin, Marshall, and Gibson. And even with those first world name brands, most of their manufacturing is in China, Korea, Japan, or Mexico. Though not their very high-end expensive models, they're made in the States. Come on, how many times have you seen a label on anything that says, designed in the USA? You know what that means, don't you? Who do they think they're fooling? So unfortunately these days, probably 95% or more of all the equipment in a music store is made in China. Alright, so I'm not saying Chinese don't make good stuff. They make a lot of good stuff. Make a lot of crap, too. Anyway, yesterday I saw something that caught my eye in the Fender guitar section, where again 95% of their manufacturing is outside the States, except the very top flagship most expensive line. Now, Gibson guitars, another very well-known name in American guitars, their cheaper instruments made in the third world go under the name Gibson Epiphone. And their top-end American-made models, the most expensive and desirable, only about 5% of their production, are labeled just plain Gibson. Which is why you almost never see a Latin guitar player with a real US-made Gibson or Fender. Unless he's a rich kid or a genuine old-timer who got that guitar as a hand-me-down. Because, you know, there was a time when US manufacturers did not outsource, and the only electric guitars that ever made it to Latin America were made in the USA. So then what's the difference with a brand name that has guitars made in the USA and in China, or Korea, or Mexico? Well, to the non-musician or novice musician, they look almost exactly the same. But the price difference is astounding. For example, if you wanted to buy a brand new US-made Fender Stratocaster guitar, the one that so many professional American rockers use, it could be anywhere from $1,500 and up. Whereas one made in the third world, same brand, $200 to $600. Less than half the price of the US model, but they look pretty much the same. Same thing with Gibson and their cheaper version, Epiphone. They look almost exactly alike, except the real thing made in the USA is about twice as heavy. You can tell when you pick it up, meaning the quality and density of the wood is much different. Not to mention, real guitar players could tell in a second just by playing a few notes, even with their eyes closed. So why am I bringing this up? And what's it got to do with living in Latin America? Well, I happen to own a couple of original classic Gibson and Fender guitars, a real Les Paul made in the late 60s and a Fender Jazz Bass early 70s. And they've got a number of on-the-job dings, bangs, and scratches to prove it. Both made in the USA, of course, because back then there was no outsourcing. Meanwhile, back at the music store, I made a beeline for the Fender guitar display, where there were maybe 30 guitars nicely displayed, with at least 25 of them the Squire. That's the low-end Fender guitar line made in Korea. Now, in that group of 30, they also had two or three of the very high-end made-in-USA guitars, which almost no one can afford. So then why do they stock them? Hard to fathom, huh? I guess in a way it's like having a Lotus, Ferrari, Maserati dealership. They've got them all down here, you know? In reality, very, very few of them are ever sold, except to the one percenters, the very wealthy. They're just toys that inevitably end up gathering dust when their owners lose interest. Anyway, while checking out the Fender guitars, I noticed two new entries that weren't there the last time I was in that shop. An expensive US-made Fender Jazz Bass and Stratocaster. Each was close to $2,000, yet they were scratched and dinged and kind of marred up like old classic instruments are, like my own. So I pulled them down and looked at their tags. They were distressed reissues from the 1960s. Which really struck me funny because you can go online and buy an aged, distressed, old 1960s or 70s classic guitar for around the same price. Sure, there are some very valuable ones online and you can pay 10 or 20 times more, but you can get a lot of them within that price range. If that's your style, that's the sound you're looking for, why not get the real thing? Sheesh. I really don't get who's in charge of marketing for these companies. It has to be Gen X's or Millennials. Or maybe it's just me. I've been living in Latin America too long and I'm hopelessly out of touch. Well, if I am, I'm having a pretty good time of it. Oh, and here's the greater point I wanted to make about this little music store adventure. There was a little Latin salesman guy following me around the whole time. That happens sometimes. I asked him what kind of interest his clients had in those distressed, expensive guitars. Well, he said everyone who walks in wants to play them all right, but no one ever buys them. We haven't sold one. Then he said normally it's our policy not to let anyone take a guitar off the top rack and even finger it or play it. Meanwhile, I had taken both of them down and I was strumming one as he was speaking to me. I looked at him, handed him the guitar and said, "Oops, I'm sorry." Then he apologized and said, no, I didn't mean you. Go ahead and play. Play as long as you want." He said, "Don't worry, our house is your house. You know, the mi casa is your casa bit." Yep, the gringo advantage rides again. Though in this case, there were two parts to that gringo advantage. One, I was possibly the only person who walked in that store all day, or maybe all week or month, who actually appeared to have the money to be able to afford one of those guitars. And number two, something I had never thought about, but he also mentioned, when he said, "Go ahead, play any one of them as long as you like," he said, "Now get this, it's nice when a gringo comes into the store and plays one of our guitars." And you know, there was a steady flow of people coming in and out, taking guitars off the rack, strumming them, poking at keyboards and drums, 99% of them dreamers who will never make a cent from music. So in a way, this salesman guy was thinking of me as a marketing tool. So there you have it, yet another example of the gringo advantage. By the way, in most Latin music stores, as in up in the States, you can rent musical equipment and instruments too. You know, in case you have a one-off gig at a big venue, you can rent some high-powered stuff. However, as this little Latino salesman told me, they don't rent out the good stuff, the American-made Gibsons and Fenders, and some of the other high-end stuff. What does that say? Could it be they've experienced the cultural problem of Latinos not being very good caretakers of theirs and other people's property? Details. Yep, I've been stung that way too. I learned my lesson. I lent things to various Latin American amigos, and the stuff always seemed to come back in worse condition or didn't come back at all. However, that happened to me with a couple of family members and friends up in the States too, so maybe it's just one of those universal human foibles, huh? All right, enough said about that. You know, I get emails all the time from people saying, "Johnny, what's the best Latin country right now to live, work, play, invest, or retire in?" Or they say, "Johnny, I'm coming down. What Latin or gringo businesses do you recommend I get into or invest in when I get down there?" Yep, I'm talking about straight to the point, simple emails like that. Like it's that easy to just say, "Go to Nicaragua, buy a macadamia farm, and live happily ever after." There you have it. All of life's problems solved. Happy days are here again. Well, it ain't quite that easy. I appreciate all those emails and that you're thinking about your future. At least many, many people are thinking about the idea of getting the hell out. Everyone with a brain really does need what might be the best insurance policy of all. That would be your Plan B. Which is why I urge everyone to go to www.thenewexpat.com and download my phone consult questionnaire form. Study it, fill it out, take some notes. I'm sure you'll find it'll give you a broader and deeper perspective on the questions you're looking to have answered. You'll find your best Latin country options, destinations, business and investment options. Depends a great deal on you, your lifestyle, your personality, your finances, interests, hobbies, the baggage you might have, whether you're bringing it down or leaving it back home. Are you a social butterfly, a loner? Do you have kids? How old are they? Are they on board with the plan? Do they even know there's a plan? Do they want to come down? Or do they hate you for even mentioning it? Are you an introvert, extrovert, fun-loving, party type, chance-taker, pragmatist, intellectual? Are you a loner, teetotaler, do-gooder? Or maybe you're the ultimate, off-the-grid, do-it-yourself type. Are you sensitive or tough, a nice guy or difficult to get along with? Are you looking for love, looking for a relationship, or maybe looking to ditch one? Do you meditate? Are you the natural type, maybe looking to write the great un-American novel? Do you want to build a boat, live on a boat, build a container house maybe, live on a lake, the ocean? In the highlands? By the beach? Can't you see there's just so many variables and so much you have to consider, which is why there can never be just one country or destination that's perfect for you. There are so many good options. Speaking of business and investments, there are lots and lots of gringos and expats who have struck it rich. In fact, a lot of newbie expats and gringos who just landed recently, they can't help but notice a lot of really jamming gringo businesses, especially on the tourist trail. I hear newbie expats and gringos say all the time, "Man, look at that guy raking the dough. Such a simple idea, so cheap too, so easy." Well, sometimes it is and sometimes it ain't. Though it sure looks easy from where you're sitting because you just happen to have gotten down here in the last couple of months And that gringo, the guy who's cleaning up with that beach chair rental business, and that Texas barbecue guy with the mobile trailer, making money hand over fist, well, they just got down here before you did and filled a niche. So it's true, there's a lot of easy money down here, but it's in those niche opportunities. And how do you find them? Well, boots on the ground, of course. By the way, I remember my dad once said, easy money made too young makes you lazy. That's the story of every entitled rich kid here, too. And that, believe it or not, is a big problem with gringos who bring their kids down. Why is that so common? Well, suddenly you can afford full-time housekeepers and nannies. In fact, I was shocked just the other day when I heard an expat lady say her and her husband were going to have another kid. That would be number 3. All right, to each his own. And then she said, I'm going to have to get another nanny. All right, except for the fact that she's got a cleaning lady, a gardener, and a full-time nanny to take care of her other 2 insufferable gringo kids. Can you even imagine living that way? 3 kids and 2 full-time nannies? And she said it like having 3 kids without 2 nannies is such a heavy load. Well, you know, you can't live people's lives for them. I find it kind of hard to keep my mouth shut around that one. Though I have mellowed a lot in the 27 years I've been down here. Don't laugh. Sometimes I'm actually accused of being on mañana time. That's gringo mañana time, you know. There is a difference. That could be 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, even a half an hour late. Quite different from Latin mañana time, which could be a couple hours late or even mañana. You know, just like the word. Hey, I'm not the only one. When you're a gringo down here a long time, you'll probably fall into that pattern yourself. You'll figure it out eventually. You can either show up on time and sit around with your finger up your butt for who knows how long and get all irritated and frustrated. Or you could do as so many of us do, slip into gringo mañana time and have a much more relaxed and enjoyable day. That way, when the Latins start trickling in for appointments and such, you'll be much less pissed off. In fact, I remember early on when expat Eddie first started his sushi business, he said he was at wit's end and just about to throw in the towel. He just could not get his people to show up on time. He said it reminded him of a couple of girls he used to go out with back in the States, and they weren't Latinas either. If the date was at 8, he'd be at her house on the dot. He'd sit in the living room for a while, and she'd waltz in at 8:30. By the way, it's often much worse when playing the dating game here in Latin America. Another Latin American cultural quirk you have to get used to. But where were we? Oh yeah. Talking about some of the emails I get, and why if you're looking for answers to big questions like where should I live in Latin America, well, first I highly suggest you download my phone consult questionnaire form on the newexpat.com website. It's free, so do it. Then after you've gone through it all and answered those questions, that's when you should consider setting up a one-on-one phone consultation with me. Or maybe not. Maybe you've got your own plan B pretty well in order. You've done studying, research, legwork, you've got boots on the ground and are ready to pull a trigger. Plus, you've got my past shows to listen to, all 696 of them. That in itself is over 300 hours of information. So then maybe you don't need to talk to me personally, one-on-one, about anything at all. But a few hundred people have done so already, and of course, if you plan on attending my January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar, you'll get a free one-on-one phone consultation with me as part of the deal. By the way, I've always offered a money-back guarantee if you're not completely satisfied with the seminar. Now, let's see, I've been doing these seminars a couple times a year now for 7 years, and I never had a single person ask me for a refund. I've had lots and lots of repeat offenders, too, and that says volumes in itself. Though I did have one guy stiff me. You longtime listeners probably remember me telling that story maybe 4 or 5 years ago now. Guy who came down, by the way, a guy that no one really wanted to sit next to. He was a kind of disagreeable know-it-all. Now, I didn't learn about this till much later, but I found out a lot of the other attendees were referring to him as Head. H-E-A-D. Always preceded by another 4-letter word. And where's he right now? Well, I don't know, but I bet he's on the gringo tourist trail somewhere. And he's earned the same nickname. By the way, if you want to hear the whole story, check the archives. That said, how's your Plan B insurance policy coming? Because that's really what it is, a very important insurance policy. When I saw the news about the whole island of Puerto Rico being without power, that's around 3 million or so people, and that hundreds of thousands of people are being evacuated because of the floods, I'd be thinking if I didn't have my Plan B at least started, I'd be worried. There's no other way to put it. So again, I'm going to ask, how far along are you on your plan B? You know, I think, and many, many people are saying, the very best way to get that plan B going is to attend my Expat Insider Seminar this January. You can check out the sign-up page, the itinerary, and the early bird discounts at www.thenewexpat.com. And if you just can't make it down to my Boots on the Ground event, the next best thing to taking a seminar is to sign up for my Expat Essentials course. Get my free video that explains it all at expatplanb.com. All right, changing gears a bit, but not much. When you talk about calamities, emergencies, and natural disasters, I mentioned a few shows ago about EMP blasts. There's been a lot of talk lately about North Korea's two satellites that are passing over the U.S. every day. Each one, some analysts think, capable of setting off an EMP device. And that, as you know, could disable large parts of the electric power grid. And even if North Korea doesn't give it a shot, that will be the next stage of warfare as we know it. So, the electric grid could be disabled with a very small suitcase nuclear device. But easier yet, because nukes are very hard to come by and are very closely monitored, many experts are saying the grid will be brought down first by hackers. In fact, you heard me mention a couple shows ago how hackers have penetrated various U.S. power plants, and the government knows it. The question is, are you ready for that eventuality? Either way, it will happen, you know. Oh, and there's the real possibility of a solar mass ejection from the sun. Look it up. Solar mass ejection. The big ones hit the Earth infrequently, a couple times every 100 years. In fact, we're overdue for a big one now. And when that happens, big chunks of the power grid will go down for a long, long time. Now, I mentioned a few shows ago about Faraday cages and how you can protect some electronic equipment. One of the best ways is to have a big old metal garbage can. By the way, it shouldn't be a rusty one, and the lid should fit nice and tight. You put your electronic devices in the garbage can before the event, of course. By the way, you'll probably get some advanced warning in the case of a solar flare, a couple hours. Of course, if there's an imminent war and some kind of electronic attack is coming, you'll hear about the tensions and the buildup on the news, maybe even a couple days ahead. So you put your vital electronic equipment, computers and stuff, in the big metal garbage can. And what I forgot to tell you is you should never let your electronics touch the metal of the can inside. You should have your electronics in Tupperware or plastic storage boxes and then put those in the garbage can. That means things like laptops, iPads, portable backups and hard drives, iPhones, walkie-talkies, radios will all be safe in there. I know just talking about this sounds a little nutty, doesn't it? I know a couple of guys very high up in the military and they're saying that's the next plan of attack. Anyway, there are lots of other electrical appliances in your house that will get fried internally. No, they won't blow up or start smoking, but the electronics are very delicate, and they can get fried, and you'll never know it. By the way, there is a way to save 50 to 80% of all the electronics and appliances that you can't get into your garbage can Faraday cage. Here's the trick. If there's an anticipated gigantic solar flare, or some pudgy North Korean idiot with a bad haircut is intent on escalating the pissing contest, do the following to the electronic appliances you can't get into your garbage can. Number one, remove all the power cords and chargers from your electronic stuff immediately. You know how you can unplug your power cord from things like your DVD and TV? Of course, one end plugs into the socket in the wall, but the other end sometimes plugs right into the back of your unit, correct? It's the cord that acts like an antenna during an EMP, sends that signal into your unit and fries the electronics. So, removing the cord will drastically reduce the intensity of that pulse. So, keep that in mind. Also, keep in mind that you can use an old microwave oven as the perfect Faraday cage, too. So, as far as it goes, here's a little more on that subject since we've all blown out microwaves and might just have an old one laying around. If you got an old one that doesn't work anymore, it will protect your equipment nicely. However, when you open the door, you'll see it's not that big in there. But big enough for a couple of tablets, some iPhones, external hard drives, backups, that kind of stuff. Remember what I said about power cords? Microwaves, refrigerators, washer dryers, and other appliances, etc. The power cords are permanently attached to the back panel, right? You can't pull them out like you can with your TV. That means those appliances are very vulnerable. And the smarter they are, that means the more electronics they have, the more likely they are to get blown out. So that's something to think about next time you have to buy a major appliance. Get a dumb one, one that doesn't have all those electronic buzzers and whistles. Two reasons for that, of course. One, I just mentioned. And secondly, do you really want all those devices in your house spying on you? Because in a way, that's what they're doing. And the smarter they are, the more information they're sending back to the electric company through your smart meter and the internet. But you knew that already, right? So by all means, next time one of your big appliances poops out, get the stripped-down model. That'll be the one that'll spy on you the least and the one that's most likely to survive a big solar mass ejection, or EMP. And as for that old broken microwave oven that's going to be serving as your new Faraday cage, just take a big snippers and cut the cord off right at the back end of the unit. The shorter, the better. So what about the other big appliances that won't be in the Faraday cage? The ones with the big, long power cords, like your refrigerator, that cannot be detached from the back of the unit. Well, this might sound like overkill. In fact, this whole conversation might sound like overkill to you. Now, just so you don't think I'm completely going off the edge here, you know, I am a degreed electrical engineer, biomedical engineer, and satellite communications engineer. So I know a little bit about this stuff. I'm not the tinfoil sombrero-wearing type. And even if I was, I'd take it off once in a while to wash my hair, you know? I have a few engineering buddies up in the States I still keep in contact with. More than one of them, who I've spoken to about this EMP and solar flare stuff, has solved the problem of the long cords on those big appliances that will never fit in a Faraday cage. They're taking the subject very seriously and redoing the cords themselves. In other words, they've cut the cords off completely and made individual plug-in socket ports in the back of each appliance. So now, just like computers and TVs, etc., they can pull the power cord instantly. I know, that really does sound like overkill, but for engineering guys who are in the know to go out of their way and do all that, because it does take some time and effort, that should make everyone else, non-technical types that is, more than just a little nervous. So who's wearing the tinfoil sombrero now? By the way, most engineers and scientific types I know are a little bit wacky. But without them and their ideas, you know, we'd all still be living in caves. So, are you nervous yet? How's your plan B coming?
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.